folks, before we begin, I want to give you a heads up that this episode is jam-packed with spoilers. If this is a problem, stop now and go watch Crash Landing on You, then come back and listen. For all the rest of you, hope you enjoy the episode.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Daebak Podcast, where we do a deep dive into the classic Korean dramas that have won over generations of fans across decades and around the world.
Discussing Crash Landing on You, the 2019 drama that is a monster hit that has introduced Korean dramas to an entirely new audience in the West. I'm one of your hosts, Alisa, also known as the Bollywood Newbie on Twitter, and I'm joined by Melanie of Pardesi Reviews on YouTube. Say hi,
hello.
Hello. Vicky of That Vicky Girl, also on YouTube.
Hi.
And Catherine of TotallyFilmy.com.
Hello.
So to begin this episode, I want to give an acknowledgement to the power of Boys Over Flowers 11 years after it aired, because we had an amazing reception to our last episode. Boys Over Flowers is our most listened to episode by like a lot, like quadruple the number of listens that we've had on our other episodes, which is amazing, right? And Catherine is weeping for humanity as I say that, but... But it is what it is.
I think it's a testament for how many people have seen it and would be interested on, you know, a real take, you know, our nuanced take on it. You know, we weren't just fangirling. We were talking about all the different problematic elements as well as the things that we really loved about it too.
Yeah, yes. And I don't hate every single thing about it. Best entrance ever.
Yep. Best address, best fashion, best hair. No, I think Boys Over Flowers episode is probably the most on brand for what we're trying to do with this podcast. So it's nice to get that feedback. The other thing that we've also had a huge influx of new listeners from around the world, but especially from India. Hi, India. India now makes up 60% of our listeners. Which is remarkable and also gratifying, because all of us started out as Indian movie fans and have been podcasting and YouTubing for years about Bollywood and South Indian films. So, you know, having all of these new Indian listeners coming in is like coming full circle for us. It's like our people found us. So it's very nice. Welcome, everybody. The other nice thing is we have South Korean listeners now. And in our last episode, we were wondering about where's the South Korean listeners. They still don't make up a huge percentage of our listeners, but we do have some folks. So welcome, South Korea. We're happy to have you. Hi.
welcome.
Some of the other countries where we have listeners include the US, the UK, Philippines, Canada, Germany, Australia, Indonesia, Turkey, Brazil, Austria, Finland, Israel, Malaysia, the Netherlands, Peru, Singapore, Spain, and Chile, which is amazing. We're literally on every continent except for Antarctica, which I'm very proud of. And I'm now determined to get a listener in Antarctica.
And she'll do it too.
I'll totally do it. And finally, we don't want to forget Russia, because one of our coolest listeners, Ksenia, is in Russia, but for some reason it never comes up in our analytics, but she's awesome. So we just want to acknowledge that. We also got a lot of feedback from folks on our Boys Over Flowers episode, and it was incredibly gratifying, because I think I can speak for all of us to say it was a challenging episode to record. It was very long and emotionally draining in some ways, because we hit some really heavy topics. So we are really happy that people responded well to it. I want to like specifically mention some folks. The women at Dramas Over Flowers shared our podcast on Twitter with the following comments. For our listeners who've been wondering when we're going to do a deep dive into Boys Over Flowers, here's an excellent episode by another K-drama pod you should check out. You guys did such an awesome job of covering every problematic, interesting, as well as LOL worthy aspects of this old classic. It needs to be heard. So that was awesome feedback from some ladies who are kind of OG podcasters on K-dramas and who also do a similar vibe as our podcast in terms of diving into social issues and other issues on their podcast. So that was extra cool. And a special thank you to Paroma, who's part of the podcasting team over there, because she flagged the problem with my podcast or our podcast not appearing on all the podcasting platforms out there, and I fixed it, and then our numbers skyrocketed. So thank you for that. That was super helpful. Another piece of feedback I want to read out is Make It Memorable on the K-drama subreddit said, I listened to your Coffee Prince and Boys Over Flowers episodes, and they were both great. You've got a good balance of critical analysis and fangirling, and the variety of participants generates a nice mix of perspectives. I'm really looking forward to your My Mister episode because that's one of my favorite dramas, and I hope you get a Discord started soon so listeners can interact with you. I'm not sure we're going to do a Discord. My son would be very amused if we did a Discord, but I don't think we've made any decisions on doing that. But thank you for the feedback. That's awesome that you guys want to talk to us. It's actually really exciting. And Serafina Picala on Twitter said, it was a great listen. It's definitely a love-hate show for me. I was simultaneously so appalled and yet entertained while watching it. I do want to watch some of the other versions to compare them. I found John D. Such a frustrating lead. So did we. So we're on the same bench as you regarding the show. And then finally, a listener who listened to our Sam Soon episode, which was really exciting for me because I love it. And she said, I listened to the Sam Soon episode, then binged all of it, then re-listened. Absolutely loved your takes and love Sam Soon. The Boys Over Flower episode still couldn't convince me to finish, but I love y'all and can't wait for more of you.
I think that was amazing that we influence somebody to watch the whole show. You know, that's just, I mean, I know Alisa was really happy about that because she's the one that got me to watch that show. And I'm so glad that she did because it is amazing. And I don't know if I would have sought out such an early drama. So I'm glad that us highlighting a classic led to somebody watching it and enjoying it.
Yeah, yes. I'll take somebody going to Sam Soon over Boys Over Flowers any day.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yes. So we got to get more love. We got to get more love for Sam Soon. I'm going to start promoting that episode more. So anyway, thank you, everybody. This keeps us going. We love you all. We love getting your feedback. But now I'd like to segue into Crash Landing on You. Crash Landing on You, woohoo, woohoo, is a drama that came out at the end of 2019 and ran until February 2020, just as the world was going into lockdown at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. And this timing is extremely significant, as we will get into during the podcast. The show was produced as part of a partnership between Netflix and the Korean production company Studio Dragon, which meant the show had a production budget of $20 million, which is amazing. That's movie level money, and it shows, yeah. As we'll go into, the production values are extremely high for this show. The show was a monster hit both in Korea and around the world. It was the second highest cable drama in Korean TV history, bigger than Goblin. Huge ratings across Asia, with the last episode getting almost 500 million views in China alone.
And mind-boggling.
I know, right? It's a lot of views. Notably, also captured the attention of viewers in the West. Netflix viewership of non-English language programming rose 50% in the US during the pandemic. Hard numbers on Crash Landing on You specifically don't seem to exist, but there were articles written about it in the Washington Post, The Guardian, Time Magazine, Variety, Elle, and many other outlets. And we are among those new viewers who were captured by Crash Landing on You. It was my first K-drama, and it was Melanie's second, but it was the one right. that jump-started her love for dramas.
My obsession.
Her obsession. Her obsession for dramas.
Yeah.
Crash Landing on You tells the story of Seri, a South Korean chaebol heiress who accidentally paraglides into North Korea, where she falls in love with Captain Ri Jong-hyuk, a handsome and noble captain in the North Korean army who protects her until she can return home. The show also includes a huge cast of secondary characters, including North Korean villagers, the soldiers under Captain Ri's command, and Seri's scheming family. It stars Sonia Jin as Yoon Seri, Hyun Bin as Ri Jong-hyuk, Kim Jong-hyun as Gu Seong-jun, Seri's former fiance, and So Ji-hye as So-dan, Captain Reed's former fiance. And there's also a huge cast of character actors that are like a who's who of character actors in Korea that I are too many, literally too many to name. So one of the themes of this podcast series is what makes a classic, but in this case, we're looking at a newer show and asking ourselves whether we think it's going to be a classic of the future. So do you think it has what it takes to be an enduring classic? And why is this a gateway drama for so many? And I'm going to toss this over to you guys.
I'll just tell you my experience. I literally can't remember what pushed me to watch that first episode. I think it was early enough on that there wasn't someone who specifically told me I had to watch it. I literally think that it was the promotions of the trailers on Netflix that got me to start watching it. And I watched it in March, so the series had completed. I wasn't watching it week by week like some other viewers did. I was able to completely, you know, binge it. And it happened at that point in March when lockdown was happening. My normal comfort is reading romance novels, and I couldn't concentrate on reading. So I didn't have that comfort. And I was so stressed out. I happened to be immunocompromised. And so lockdown meant that I wasn't leaving my house, and my husband was doing the grocery shopping, and I was not leaving. So I was in such a state of stress. And so I think I was just grasping for something to watch. And then I fell into it, and it just, because I read so much romance, I recognized all the tropes. I was like, oh my gosh, this show is giving me everything I want. You know, it's giving me, and it was a cathartic experience. I remember crying really hard, and that being this cathartic release of some of the tension that I was holding in. And then it's just been this drumbeat this entire 2020 as everyone has been in lockdown, everyone has been searching for new content, and the word spread. And I've done that myself of recommending it to so many different people. Even, you know, it feels like such a show for women, but I know I've recommended it to men and they've really enjoyed it and then gone on to watch other K-dramas. So and there's just something special about the time, and I can't separate my love for the show with the time that I watched it. But I do think because it has been a gateway for so many people, especially in the West, that it will be a classic because it was that one that got them into K-dramas. You know, it was the one, it was the gateway. And so that for, it's a quality show, but even aside from that, I think just because it was that first love for so many people, it will remain a classic.
So this is Elisa. I had a similar experience as Mel. It was my first K-drama, and it came during the lockdown at a really difficult time in the US politically. And I just immediately was swept up in it. I binged it. I was sobbing. I was just like, I fell in love with Hyun Bin. I thought he was amazing. And I was so enthralled by it. However, as you guys are aware, but our listeners are not yet, when I rewatched it, I did not have the same reaction. And in fact, I was shocked by my second reaction on a rewatch because I was actively annoyed with a lot of aspects of the show. It's still like a good quality show, and it's still got so much to recommend it. And I would unreservedly recommend it to a new K-drama watcher. But like now that I have more K-dramas under my belt, now that I've seen the actors and other things, like I've seen Hyun Bin in other parts and seen what he's capable of, I feel like it has definitely changed my perspective on this show. I think that, so yeah, so it's like interesting to me because it was my first, and it was like definitely the gateway for me. It led directly to this podcast. And the way it led directly to this podcast is I went looking for more Hyun Bin dramas, and I found My Lovely Samsung. It was the third drama I ever watched. And it was made in 2005. It's an older drama. And I absolutely fell in love with it. He was brilliant in it. So was Kim Sana. And that's what led me on this journey to find these older dramas that have stood the test of time. But yeah, this drama itself, I have really mixed emotions about it now that I've rewatched it. There are parts of it that are not so great for me, which we'll get into as we discuss.
But on the other hand, having watched so many dramas, I was just going to say, there were new things for me to enjoy on a second watch, because I do recognize so many of the character actors. And so I got extra joy. And then certain Easter egg things that, you know, I had no clue about, cameos and whatever, that I could appreciate on a second watch.
Okay. Vicky here. So I actually, it was not my first K-drama. Boys of a Flower was, as I mentioned the last podcast. I started watching this as it was airing. So I went through the struggle of waiting weeks by weeks.
Oh, God.
It was emotional torture. I'm not going to lie to you. And I think that's why my perspective on the show, it's kind of like Alyssa's, but however, I had it during the first rewatch, the first watch, not the rewatch. Whereas after it went on, I felt like it just went, it felt like every episode was just like a sob fest after a sob fest for me. After a while, it was like, can they just be happy for once in their life? And it was just like, and the episodes were really long, and it's like, I wanted more. Like, I love romance, and I love, of course, the show is amazing, regardless of how, you know, whatever I felt like it was lacking, it's still better than most. But definitely watching it, I felt my frustrations through the first watch, and I felt it again rewatching it. And it's just, I think it will be a classic, though, because no matter what, there is something about it that just kind of touches your soul, no matter how the music. Yeah. I mean, come on, the music, the fashion. I mean, Son Yeo-jin is just that's the girly, and Hyun Bin, gosh, I mean, excuse me, you know, listen, there's so many aspects of the show that makes it just appetizing to the audience, and I think that's why most people are so in love with this idea of Chloe. And but I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like there is no perfect drama, at least in my world. I don't think it's a perfect drama. I don't think it was like super duper amazing. There's always room for improvement, and as we get on, we will touch on that. But personally, I also am like, I love it, but it is what it is. For me, I'm not like super duper crazy about it, but I think it was a great show for what it was. So
yeah.
So do I get to be the curmudgeon now?
Of course, go ahead. Catherine is our resident curmudgeon, which we deeply appreciate.
And I'm upfront about the fact that I'm lacking a romance gene. So I'm a very different audience. I'm also coming at this with like 8 or 9 years experience of drama watching under my belt. I watched it before the lockdowns hit, after it started, so I could binge, but I started sort of just at the point where I knew that if I timed it right, I would hit the end just as the end came. For me, I actually was wavering about whether I should watch it, because I hadn't really enjoyed Hyun Bin in anything before this. But I have this thing where I say to myself, okay, you have to challenge yourself. So I thought, okay, let's watch this. And I was actually pleasantly surprised by how much I liked him in this. I know we'll have some things to say about that later on. I love all the character actors. Like, I'm someone who was familiar with all of those people. So for me, that was like the bonus. I found myself liking the drama, certainly loving some bits of it, but not really. It was like, okay, this is nice. Again, I would not, I wouldn't poo-poo anybody who wanted to watch it. If somebody said, do you think I should watch Crash Landing on You? I would be like, well, give it a go. See what, you know, it's perfectly lovely drama. Rewatching it, and I rewatched with my husband, who actually watches a lot of dramas with me, but he hadn't watched that one. And we both enjoyed it, but I could tell that the things that were frustrating me were also starting to frustrate him. The things I loved the first time, I loved even more on rewatch. And the things that I didn't love the first time around frustrated me a lot on rewatch. I've said to you guys, I don't know, will it be a classic? I don't know, because I have no clue what, you know, even I'm, you know, the dramas, I have no clue why people adore Boys Over Flowers and why it gets recommended all the time. No clue. So I'm not the person to make a judgment on that. That said, like the rest of you, I would recommend this to someone as a gateway because there's a lot going on here.
I think it's very accessible. I mean, like,
yes,
we, you know, one of the things is like just the way it's written, you have SETI is the point of view character in North Korea. So she gets tossed into an entirely new environment. And so as she's learning about North Korea, so are you as the viewer. Mm-hmm. And so you get invested in her journey as she develops relationships with people. And then you have a mirror situation when the North Korean soldiers cross over and go to South Korea, and they're the point of view of characters, though for a South Korea, that's very fantasy land. I mean, you know, it's not actually like that. And probably North Korea is not actually like that as well.
It's a double fish out of water. So right. You're experiencing it both times. And something that we talked about is, I'm probably missing it, but the Jumuk character, one of the soldiers, he's obsessed with Korean dramas. He is my favorite of the supporting characters. I absolutely adore him. And then, like, he's the entire reason I went to watch Startup, because I just was like, oh, him again. But he is the one that teaches us things. He shows the other soldiers what a finger heart means. He's like, oh, you faked that she's your fiance. Oh, you're gonna fall in love now. That's the way it always happens, you know. So he is our guide to certain tropes within K-dramas, and he's educating the audience along with Captain Yi and the other soldiers, and also for certain South Korean slang or whatever it is. So we're learning about the culture, and when all those soldiers go to South Korea and they're experiencing things for the first time, they're a little bit of a guide for us as well, of, you know, like the culture of going to the bathhouse and things like that. So it's things that I had never seen before. You know, I got introduced to through their experiencing.
I think also, you know, to give a shout out to Hyun Bin and Son Ye-jin, they're both really good actors. Yeah. They're both extremely charismatic. They're both attractive. It's an understatement. Hyun Bin is like one of the most beautiful men on the planet. I think I can objectively say that. Amen. He is gorgeous. And especially in this, he's gorgeous in everything, but he bulked up in this and they photographed. Oh my God, right? He looks so good.
Oh my God.
Even on the rewatch, like when I was getting actively annoyed by some stuff, there'd be a shot of him and I'd have to pause it to take a closer look. Because he looks so good.
Casting directors just did a great job for me, I thought. Like everybody did their scene really well. Like the characters were really good.
And even my husband, like there's, you know, that scene where he's all pouty face, mm-hmm. my husband was laughing. Like he adored that.
Yeah.
It was interesting for me to see the bits that he really liked and the bits he connected with.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that you really, this is where I start to get a little critical. I think it was you needed somebody like him with his charisma in that part, because as written, the character, in my opinion, is kind of like, he's just perfectly perfect and there's no character mm-hmm. arc and he never has a flaw and he's just sort of like unrelentingly noble through the whole narrative. And this is like a very much of a personal preference thing. I like my heroes to have an arc and flaws and to have to work to earn the heroine. And he does work to earn the heroine by repeatedly saving her life. But I mean, it's a different journey.
Climbing through a hole.
Yes, and getting shot and like climbing through a tunnel. And, you know, I mean, yes. Okay, he worked to get the heroine. But he didn't do emotional work on himself to get the heroine. Does that make any sense?
Okay, yeah.
There's an emotional arc for that character. And so I kind of feel like it's casting him in it was really good because he is charismatic enough and has enough presence to flesh that out, even though mm-hmm. it's not written down. Like if you look at
nobody, but nobody pines like Hyun Bin pines. Like,
yes.
Oh my God.
The way he's like so, like, yeah. And nobody cries like Son Ye-jin cries. And like there's just so many epic moments that are, I have to admit, like, even though I started to get a little annoyed by some of this after a while, but some of those romantic moments, like when he's looking for her in the marketplace and he holds up the candle.
The candle, my heart.
Iconic. Iconic.
It really is. I have to admit, that scene was amazing.
And the little instrumental in the background.
I know. I know. It was so incredible. Just like, oh, and when they reunite in his father's house, that's another epic moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And the father's reacting, which actually brings me to the secondary characters in this, because it is literally a who's who of K-drama character actors.
Yeah,
yes.
In the cast. Yeah, they had really good cast. Like, what? I mean,
the Ashimas, like, are you kidding me? Like, everybody, all of these ladies all together.
And you don't realize it until you watch other K-dramas afterwards. Right. You're like, whoa, oh my gosh. You're like, it was like amazing people in this show, and I just didn't realize it. Yeah.
On the rewatch, I was like, I know every single one of the Ashimas. Actually, I think I knew almost everybody in the cast, because I had seen them after the rewatch. I had seen them before, like notably two of the supporting actors. Sodan's mother and uncle are in Parasite.
Yes, exactly. So, that was even
Which I didn't know the first time I watched it, and then I was like, they were in Parasite.
And thinking about that, Parasite a year ago had just won the Best Picture.
Life was
Oscar.
Good back then.
And I had no clue watching this that they were the same people that I had just seen in that film. You know, they were incredible in that film. And they're very funny in this drama as well. So,
and Catherine, you'll know the name of this actress, and I feel bad that I didn't jot it down in our show notes, but she was the one who got drunk, the Ajuma, who was the village.
I am not going to be able to pull her name out tonight either. This is a bad time of day for me. I am like flat exhausted. And I wish I could, because
I feel guilty. I'll throw it in the show notes, because she's the MVP, man. She is good in everything, and she's hilarious.
And she was the so comedic in her private life as the head of the art gallery.
I love her.
with that wig with that wig. She's been in so many things.
And what I love about these actors is sometimes in dramas, their roles, their comedic roles, and they're pitched kind of high.
Mm-hmm.
And here it was just pitched perfectly. So you got these moments of comic relief and or connection with the people in the village, and the tone was just perfect. Like, those are my favorite bits.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, on the rewatch, I love the Ajumas. I love Sodan's family. And I actually loved Sodan and Sungjoon. I keep wanting to call him Alberto. I should just call him Alberto. Alberto.
Everybody would know who we're talking about.
Yes, that's true. I love them more than I love the main couple. I know, blasphemy, but honestly, I was much more invested. And I wish they had developed that relationship better. And I'm just going to jump in the pool. So what frustrated me about the main relationship in Crash Landing on You, which has captivated so many people. I know so many people are just like, it's the best romance ever. And there are a lot of romantic elements that I loved, but I don't know. It's just like, not only Captain Reed being so perfect to the point of like, when does perfect become a little boring or a little flat or a little uninteresting, right? Yeah. Yeah, Vicky's nodding with me.
This is when I agree with Alicia.
All right, I'm just gonna break in to say the actress's name is Kim Sun Young, was the one that we were talking about.
She's awesome.
So she is amazing, and she's been in so many different dramas, and she's you're right, and she was pitch perfect in this. Yeah, okay. So coming to the Mr. Perfect and all of that, like I described, there's a romance term among romance novels of a cinnamon roll hero, and that's what I think Hyun Bin is. I mean, the big character arc is Seri's journey from it's a gender flip of her being like a Mr. Darcy, like, but even beyond, like, she's the arrogant CEO who literally has no friends, is mean to her employees, and has ostracized herself from her family. not without reason, but anyway, like she has no one. She's just a workaholic. And then she's taken as a fish out of water. And the cinnamon roll is someone, it's from an Onion article. That's where it comes from. Too pure for this world. Okay, so that is that is Captain Ree. He is too pure for this world. He is so innocent. He's just so good, good, good. But it's not like the main thrust of this romance. I would agree. In a drama, it's better if both of them have more of a character arc. His is really, he doesn't feel that he's worthy of his own individual dreams, right? Like he really wants to be a pianist, and at the end he gets to go back to that, but it's all about duty to country and his family, and his, especially the death of his brother. He doesn't feel like I can't lose some, that's the one, you know, speech that he gives, I don't know if it was a voiceover in a hospital, like I can't, you know, after his brother dies, I can't lose anyone again, so I didn't look for love. But he was all in from the very first morning. She was in his house. I mean, besides the comedic, should I kill her, right, when she, you know, right that night before. He's making her noodles from scratch, people.
It bothered me, though. It bothered me that he was all in right away. Like, I wanted to see a little more struggle. Like, I don't know. It just felt, it didn't, I don't know.
To me, it was the comfort I needed. I was just, like, seeing, like, this pure love was just, like, that's, I don't know. It just fed my soul at that moment. But I can understand and see your frustration of he's too perfect.
I think butting in with that all in, I think in some ways it can also be not a flaw, but it can also speak to what his character is, as you mentioned, Melanie, whereas he's kind of closed off himself from love. And here is finally a woman who's not like the woman, you know, in North Korea. And so she's, you know, she's strong. She's like yelling. She's like, you know, all over the place. He's intrigued. Yeah. And I feel like, dare I say, he almost has a crush in a way that he doesn't even realize it, you know? And so I think that in some ways, he didn't know how he felt, to be honest. I think he just kind of wanted to do something for her without him really realizing it, because I think like he was kind of battling with himself, you know what I mean? It wasn't to me, I didn't see it come from a place of, oh my gosh, I'm in love with this person, but more like, okay, well, let me just it just felt like
she needs like body wash or bring a whole bag.
He was doing these things out of natural, like he was just out of his own will without him realizing it, and it's something that he hasn't done for any other woman. So it was almost like, you know, like an elementary type of, you know, you finally meet that person you're interested in, and you're just like, oh, you're doing whatever. I don't know. That's kind of how I looked at it. If you look at it from that perspective of him not being experienced, I feel like that's kind of how, you know, it played out.
See what you're saying. I don't know. What I also got was like, so Dan is awesome. Like, why didn't you like her? And also, why are you so rude to her? He's really rude to her.
Because she was thrust on him by his parents.
Exactly.
You're marrying this. You're marrying this girl. Like, look at the way he treated her in Switzerland. Like, he literally was avoiding looking at her because he just did not want to deal with the fact that I have to marry her because my parents said. But oh my god,
wasn't he also looking at Sari in Switzerland, even though we didn't see it until the end? He had a crush. First of all, anyways, can I just say, how come he didn't recognize her? After looking at her like that time he saw her, looking at her like that, how do you not recognize her after 7 years? It's only been 7 years. I remember who I went to elementary school with. Excuse me, but okay.
Well, because he knew that she was going to try to kill herself, so that would be a memorable encounter. So I agree
I think it's also one of those when you meet someone out of context, like that was in Switzerland, like you, and she spoke English to him, and that, you know, so you would, it's like, but when you see someone, even if you've met them before, you're like, I mean, I've had that.
He was staring at her, Melanie. I mean, this man was almost drooling. How do you not
I know. Yeah. Okay. And there's a lot of stuff like that in the drama where you just have to sort of like let your brain like go over the speed bump and not think about it too much. You know, and there's a lot of moments we can pick out like that.
It's just romance reasons that you just
exactly.
I have to be the dissenting voice.
Okay.
The one without the romance gene. I adored that. Logic brain says this is ridiculous. Second time around too, every time we got the little dip into the past where something came up to remind them that they'd met before or remind us that they'd met before, I was like, I'm in for this. There.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you actually like that. What? Are you serious?
Our minds are blown right now.
Our minds are blown.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for that stuff. I am such a sucker for that stuff. Like drop little things and then show us little bits and then show us it again later and show us it again later. It's like,
But in some ways it almost had nothing to do with this because they didn't remember. So it was just kind of like, just, you know.
It's like, we have the budget. Let's go to Switzerland. Yeah, no kidding.
Though actually, and we'll probably get into this more, there actually is a reason for them to be in Switzerland that's related to the
metaphor.
But we won't get into it right away because first I want to talk about sex people, because there ain't any in this sex in this drama. Why?
I also noted the emotional beats of when do we get full on kissing, and there's two moments where, and I remember the tension of waiting for it. The two moments are when they're at the border the first time, before she finally walks over into South Korea and we get an embrace, and then the second time is all the way at the end in Switzerland. Like, they only, you know, the dramatic running for each other at the demilitarized, you know, 38th parallel, and, you know, that emotional scene, they actually don't kiss, they just hug and embrace and then are pulled apart. And so we don't get that fulfillment. The tension is still building and building and building for the audience until finally in Switzerland, we get the kiss at the picnic.
Except that they have the drone camera that pulls back and we barely see the kiss.
Totally.
Totally. Still not enough for the woman without the romance genes and say it was, we got your number.
The thing is, like, so here's my perspective, and all of us are come to this from India, where there is no kissing ever, almost ever, because it's just a taboo kind of a thing in Indian films, less so now, but it's still not super common. And so, but there's still plenty of sexual tension. There's still plenty of scenes that you can infer that the couple had sex, right? But they just don't show it. So it's not like I'm looking for a sex scene. I'm not even necessarily looking for a kiss, but there was this weird lack of physical engagement between the main couple that I found really strange and definitely took me out of the narrative. Like, I'd be like, for example, when they're in South Korea, when they're getting drunk together and talking about Captain Ryu saying, I want to stay here. And they're sitting 3 feet apart. What the hell? Excuse my language. They don't know when they're going to see each other ever again. They could be separated at any moment. They could die, right? And they don't ever, and they don't even share a bedroom in her luxury apartment. What is up with that? I found it off-putting personally. I just don't understand why they made those choices. Yeah. They don't have to show a bedroom scene.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, and it's all like all of us have seen Shah Rukh Khan movies. Shah Rukh Khan can make kissing someone's collarbone look sexier than
very sexy.
Totally. Yes. Or even if we want to do a K-drama example, we have Touch Your Heart, which is just like the sweetest drama with a cinnamon roll hero. Yeah. And they have a scene where he asks her, is it okay if we cross the line, I think is the line they use.
Yeah.
And then they cut from that to the next morning when they're happily making breakfast together, which is fine. I don't need more than that. Yeah. Vicky is freaking out here.
No, because my thing is, I'm not even, like you said, we're not asking for, like, you know, Bridgerton sex scenes.
Right.
It could have been as simple as him holding her hands and just giving her a kiss.
Yes.
A kiss on the forehead, a hug, more moments that convince me that you guys are forbidden lovers who's finally together after so long and you can't stand to be away from each other. Give me that. Give me that.
You can't stand to keep your hands off each other. How about that? Like,
yes. I mean, yeah, you climbed through a tunnel.
For 16 hours.
16 hours.
Okay. On your belly.
Okay, maybe that was the metaphor that we were all supposed to.
Oh my God, Melanie. That's hilarious.
But we've talked about how things get pitched at different audiences and why some dramas are much more chaste than others because they're not only pitched at a South Korean audience, they're pitched at another East Asian audience, which may be more conservative. But even at that, that seems even more chaste than you have for an audience like that.
I agree.
And it's interesting because this is, from the beginning, this was a Netflix show. This isn't one that Netflix bought after it aired in South Korean television. This is one that was airing at the same time in all of these countries on Netflix. So, so, you know, I really can't explain it either, because normally if you say something's going to be on Netflix, that means some of the restrictions that you might have had of airing it on regular television are not a concern. So I can't explain why they made those decisions, or whether the planning for the show and what it was going to, the tone that it was going to be, maybe was, I don't know when Netflix stepped in or, you know, exactly on this.
I heard,
you know, oh, go ahead, Vicky. What did you hear?
I heard, and this was unconfirmed, so it might not be true. This was during the process when COVID was kind of starting to get crazy. And they were filming at that time. They even took like a week or 2 week hiatus at one point. With filming wise, so some people kind of made their own theories where they say they kind of limited a lot of the physical instances because of how it was getting really bad in with the whole pandemic at that time. So I don't know, that could be one, because it did seem odd when they came back from the hiatus. A lot of things was just like kind of weird. And even with filming, with there was a place they were supposed to film. I think they were supposed to go back to Switzerland, and I think that didn't happen. Something just kind of happened regarding travel and restrictions, and something occurred. I'm not sure, but I know that it was a news thing that I read on when I was watching during that process. So,
definitely was true that Asian countries were taking much more precautions for COVID before the lockdowns that we experienced in March in the U.S. So,
but maybe Sonya Jin and Hyun Bin were in a relationship when they made this. It wasn't public yet, but they were already in
allegedly.
A relationship. No, allegedly. It's not alleged. It's like they were in a relationship for like 3 years. Come on. And I don't even follow like Korean drama gossip, but like you can't avoid it. And I saw pictures of them in Koreatown. And I live right next to Koreatown in LA, shopping in a supermarket together like 3 years ago. So yes, they've been in a relationship for a while. It's not recent. So anyway, which makes the choices even weirder, because like they're at a real life couple who have amazing chemistry. When you see them doing their behind the scenes and their promo, they're sparkling with each other. There's this whole banter chemistry thing they've got going on in real life. So it didn't translate into the drama for me. Now, I want to be fair. I'm sorry, Vicky, you want to say something?
No, I was going to say, to quote Joey Tribbiani from Friends, when you don't see the chemistry.
What?
I'm sorry. You know, he made this saying where he basically said he doesn't have any chemistry with people he's actually dating.
Oh, right? got it.
So when you see that the sparks are off, he's, you know, dating them, or he's done something with them. So I just kind of thought about that when you said that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but I want to be fair too, because I know that there are a lot of fans out there that absolutely love the way this romance was portrayed.
Well, I love them together. So
yeah. As a real life couple, I adore them. I mean, in the context of the drama, I was a little meh on the rewatch. On the first time I saw it, I was completely head over heels swooning. The rewatch, I wasn't, which is really interesting to me. But I also think that there's a lot of people who really love that this is a pure love, that that, you know, staring each other in the eyes is as much of a connection and emotional connection. Vicky's like, freaking out. I wish you guys could see her face. I wish this was video. You know, that this is a pure love, that they are have a spiritual connection that has transcended time and so forth. It's just not for me. It's not my jam. I want a little bit more. And like I said, I mean, so we were talking about cinnamon roll heroes in other dramas, and one of them was Touch Your Heart with Lee Dong-wook playing this awkward lawyer. It's very cute, cinnamon roll. And then her private life with Kim Jae-wook, who's also a cinnamon roll. And hot, right? As Vicky's oriented, hot very as much. Hell, too. So very anyway, so I feel like you can have a very sweet character. You can have a loving, supportive male lead, but it doesn't, the way it's portrayed in Cash Landing on You, I don't know. It's just a little, for me, a little airless. It is something like a little stiff about the
main characters. I felt like when I was hearing their banter, it reminded me of classic movie banter, like from the 30s. And again, that is completely chaste kind of watching. But that was one of the things that just popped with me. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, the way he just adores that she's kind of this picky princess. And I kind of love the little epilogues at each episode. And on the very first episode, the little epilogue after the credits is that you see he hadn't drawn his gun on her at first. He's hearing her just talking into her walkie-talkie, and he gets this little smile, like he's just amused at her. And then when she notices him, then he draws his gun, and we have the scene that we saw before. But he is attracted and amused by her attitude and her, you know, running commentary and whatever from the very beginning. And I just it sort of reminded me of When Harry Met Sally, you know, where Billy Crystal is like, I love the way you order a salad. You know what I mean? Like how picky she was in ordering at a restaurant. He loved that. And I felt like that was the same thing here, that like Vicky said, that she's something exotic that he had not seen anywhere else in any other women that he had met in North Korea. She was something unique and special. And that's what he loved about her. You know, all of the negative things that other people would say, he just got a kick out of all of that.
Yeah. She was like the opposite of him. She was everything that he could probably never be in a way. And, you know, it was, I guess, this another trope of opposites attract in some type of way where, you know, it was like, wow, here's this quiet, you know, for my country type of dude. And here's this woman who's just like, whatever, money is makes the world go round. and then they meet, and you know, now it's like, whee, she brings light to his world, and he's buying candles for her. You know, it was
scented, I think, candles.
scented candles, you know. So yeah, I think honestly that's probably why people like it so much. It just kind of gives you this it's just something, it's a recipe that has been used before, but if done right, it does attract people,
right?
You know, it's like, you know, I mean, hey, this guy from Forbidden Love, North Korea, South Korea, you know, it was just one of those things. And I think that's kind of what made everybody go crazy in a way.
I mean, they set it up to be like mythic, you know, there's parallelism in Korea, and so it's like Romeo and Juliet, but nobody dies in the end, you know.
Pretty much.
I mean, there are things like, speaking of the banter, I think the first half worked better for me for a lot of reasons. North Korea was much more interesting than South Korea. And when they are on the boat, that whole scene was awesome. When they get stopped and he has to kiss her, Oh, yes. It's really funny. And then the whole scene is hilarious with everybody reacting to them. And then afterwards, when he's like, well, it's nothing, trying to make her feel better. And she's like, oh, it's nothing to you, huh? And then there's this whole, like, you know, and it's very funny. I really like that scene, actually. I thought that scene was, I like that much better than the stuff later on where everybody's crying.
Right? Oh my God. It's like they went to South Korea and all of a sudden it was like a sob fest. You would think, right? It was so funny how it switched around, because I'm here thinking, oh my gosh, once they finally go to South Korea, maybe things will get, no. It was like more headache after headache after headache. And at one point I was like, we'll just go back to North Korea at this point. And it was like, you know, it was
well, literally... I was laughing. I think it was episode 15. When I call them the ducklings, all of the soldiers had been arrested and they're interviewing, and Jumuk says, is Captain Ri okay? Because this is at the point in most dramas where somebody would get killed or they'd be really sick.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true.
And he's like, I'm really concerned.
So
they did do a good job of playing with a lot of these tropes. But yeah, I just found like the North Korean universe was so much richer, and which it is was. Right. But I kind of think also, I mean, so there's a whole political and historical context right around the portrayal of North Korea. And notably, one of the writers on the show is a North Korean, and they also had North Korean defectors advise on things like how to build the village and so forth. And so there's this quality to North Korea that I put down before podcast is comparing it to Wizard of Oz. I mean, she even gets there through a tornado. Yep. And then she lands in this mythical realm. And I think the writers may have intended that analogy because of the way they framed, like there's literally like a cow in the tornado, which is also in the Wizard of Oz.
Yep.
So, and you get there and, on the one hand, they put a lot of work into getting these details of the village correct. So things like making kimchi with seawater is one of the notable things that they put in the drama. But burying your kimchi in the cellar, things like that. But at the same time, it's a fantasy element. It's sort of like, you know, Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. I'm exploring this entirely new world. And, you know, the friendships that she forms. So there's this whole richness to the storytelling that is a kind of a fairy tale quality
that
goes away when they go to South Korea. And then in South Korea, it's, which is inevitable, product placement festival. You know, a city's taking her people to Subway, and you know, I mean, and they have to pay the bills, so I understand why the productions do this.
I mean, one thing, the chicken restaurant which the soldiers all go to, there's one YouTube video of the consultant, not the writer, but the North Korean defector consultant. She said that she just couldn't believe that in South Korea you could eat meat every day. And that when she first came to South Korea, that's what she did, is she went to this chicken restaurant and she had it every day because she just couldn't believe that she could, you know? And so she gained all this weight literally because she was just eating fried chicken every day. So I think there were notable little details, like for instance, in an early episode, Captain Ri ties her hair back before she goes out to meet the village ladies.
I really like that.
And, you know, saying like, your hair looks messy, you can't go out like that. And there, that evidently is a real thing, that North Korean women consider it untidy if your hair is not tied up. And so that was one of those little details. I think they knew that this drama, just like the Jumuk character, is going to be watched in North Korea. And it's really interesting to think about, you know, what that means, that they are knowing that part of their audience is in this country of North Korea and that they're going to be watching this. And it's so different, for instance, than King Two Hearts, and a little bit older drama that again is a romance between, that in this case it's a, you know, an alternate reality with a royalty that actually still rules in South Korea. So you have a prince in South Korea and you have a female soldier that end up getting married in that drama, but it's very different you know, very different ending and a very different kind of attitude to North Korea than you find in Crash Landing on You.
Yeah, I mean, that to me was one of the best. That was really the strongest. Like, it's really interesting because on a rewatch, everything but the central couple, I was pretty much into. Oh, the other thing I hated was the villain. Hate the villain. Yeah. Hate that stupid truck storyline. It's really boring. It's confusing.
It's the truck of doom on steroids.
Yeah. It was, oh my God, it was so dumb. And then they overpowered the villain and they didn't give him like a really good motivation for doing the things that he did. He was just sort of this implacable evil who like had the ability to like vault over the DMZ somehow and like, you know, get into a fight in a courtroom and not immediately be gunned down by the soldiers. Like it was, I thought that was really poorly done and it took me out of the drama. I mean, they wanted to create a threat to SETI. I didn't think they needed it. I mean, the inherent threat in North Korea was just being in North Korea, right? And then they
it didn't it didn't make any sense. It wasn't SETI that was the reason that he was in that courtroom, and yet she's the one that he goes after in South Korea, rather than any of the people that had turned him in North Korea. So, like, I don't know. It was just, you know, just sort of wave your hands. Reasons. This is how you know Captain Ri. Why he, you know, giving him a reason that her life is in danger, so he has to go and rescue her. But that is especially on a rewatch, you're just kind of rolling your eyes going, yeah, okay.
And I have a thing where I don't fast forward on these rewatches because I want to make sure I'm getting the full experience. And I realized that I had been fast forwarding through a lot of that stuff on the first watch because I didn't care. So it's just an interesting experience to do this time.
Well, it was the opposite for me because the first watch I was watching so closely. Actually, that was in the prime of me watching K-dramas when I didn't skip. So I was like really into that. So I remember everything. So during the rewatch, I'm not gonna lie to you, I skipped through a lot of scenes that was unnecessary. But it was okay.
And the scenes that really worked for me between the main couple that were more, except for the candle scene, which was amazing, but like mostly it was when they were kind of joking around with each other or if there was a comedic element. Because even like the epic romance reunion at his father's house is very emotional. I'm pretty sure I cried during that on the first watch. I didn't on the rewatch, but then the father's reactions are so funny that it's also another element that I really enjoyed. Like, he's like, are you kidding me with you two? And I kind of felt like he was me, like, are you kidding? So very gratifying to see the father's reaction to that. But then things frustrated me, like when she is with Sungjun in the house in the, you know, and then Ri Jong Hyuk shows up and battles all the security guards and they reunite. Anyway, long story short, they reunite and they end up spending the night in a schoolhouse together next to a roaring fire. Now, usually when that happens, you think, well, there's going to be, they had sex because it's a metaphor. They're like alone in a house next to a roaring fire. Instead, they're sitting 2 feet apart again.
And then he has a fever.
Yes, a fever. And then nothing happens. And I'm like, oh my God, you are killing me, drama. You are killing me with this. I cannot take it. And like I said, I'm not like a pervert, right? If I needed explicit sex scenes, I would not be a fan of either Indian or Korean content because you don't get it from that content. But you can still like have adults who behave like sexual snot. Completely absent in this drama. It's really well for the leading couple. The second couple, I would say, had way more like actual. There was sexual chemistry, and I love the second couple. Absolutely love them, and I really wish they had better developed their story because they were so awesome. The whole banter between them when they're at the bar, and he's like, "Well, you can't just start swearing at me," and then she like curses him out, and he goes, "You know, Captain Ri is a fool, you know, like you, when you talk to me that way, you make my heart flutter." It's so awesome. I love that.
I cried. That story.
My God, yes.
I cried. Yeah. And I'm not a crier. I cried.
That was the only thing I cried at on the rewatch was when he died.
I cried it multiple times, and actually I was surprised at myself. Like, I was like, okay, this show really knows how to manipulate my emotions. I don't know. I mean, I just, I remember like when he's shot and he wakes up in the hospital and he is mad at her for not getting on the plane the first time and he starts yelling at her. That was one of the first times I cried again. And I was, and that wasn't the first time. It was just this roller coaster of emotions that, like you're saying, you're wanting them to have the tension of them not having more skinship, the tension of, I don't know, like Vicky was saying, there it was like a sob fest in the last part of the show where you just so many moments to emotional moments making me cry. And to me, that's a mark of this show. There's just certain, I don't cry at everything, but there's just certain things, like the Sense and Sensibility when Hugh Grant comes in, comes into the room and she thinks he's married. And when she finds out and she starts crying, I've seen that. I don't even know how many times I cry every time. Right. And that's how I felt like with this show, like, maybe it's not going to matter how many times I see this, that it just really does hit me in an emotional place. And so kudos to the drama makers for making something that can affect me so much, even on a second watch, when I know how it's all going to end, you know?
Yeah, I'm the opposite. Oh gosh. Very rarely do I cry. With the, like, in all of my years of watching cinema, there's only been three Indian movies that's made me cry. Not even American movies, which is weird. But anyways, so for me, watching this, which I felt like the thing with me is after a while, like after it becomes too, every second it's like crying, it annoys me, which is weird. Unless I'm watching like a real story, like something based on a real story, or like, you know, something really, after a while, I'm like, okay, I get it. They're sad, but give me, God, stop crying.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, after, for me, it was like, because it felt like even through episode 15, they were still going through. So it was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's very, very high melodrama. But the thing is, like, a lot of people who watch this, again, I want to be fair, like, I've seen the reactions and they freaking love that. Oh, no. They love, like, the heightened.
Watching it.
Yeah.
I loved watching it. Like, there's everything that I felt. I mean, I have tweets of me tweeting. Everything I felt watching it, I meant it. But the thing is, you can love something and also find a flaw and also kind of think, like, gosh, like, this was really, like, ah. You know, it was a journey. It was a journey for me after a while. It was like, okay, I got this. Yeah, I like it.
Like, my journey is, like, I'm so surprised by it because the first time I ate it up with a spoon, I was sobbing through it. I was so totally invested in the romance. I thought, oh my God, I was just so heart-wrenching. And then the second time, I was completely dry-eyed through the whole thing, except for, actually, there were two things that made me cry. One was when Sungjin dies. And then the other one was Man-Bok when he confesses to Captain Reed. Mm. And that made me cry. And he is good in this. I love him.
His storyline is one of the best parts of this drama.
Yep. And you know, I love that character.
The villain is ridiculous, but it reminds me of the movie The Lives of Others, where you have someone who's listening in and living vicariously through these other characters. And it was actually kind of amazing that his character got to go to Korea and become South Korea and become part of the duckling groups. You know, I mean, he kind of says, well, I don't really belong here, but, you know, they kind of adopt him in.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, it also, he just the way that he portrayed it.
He did
amazing.
He did
amazing.
He's a really good actor. You watch
him, if you watch him in the world of the married, you're going to want to slap him a couple of times.
My mister too, in my Ajishi, he's the CEO. He can play a punch. I was really impressed with his range, because like, you know, you see his opposite land. But I thought Man-Bok was a really interesting character, because you're right, he is the only non-soldier who gets to cross the border, and I kept thinking, why did they have that character cross the border? He's the character who listens to everybody's thoughts, and he, so that kind of gives him an omniscient godlike status in a way in the narrative, right? Because like in Maya Jishi, actually, I'm going to spoil that. Anyway, let me shut up. I'm not going to spoil it. But when you have a character who can listen to things, they have a special place in the narrative. And I think that I started thinking about this, and I don't have a good resolution or thought about it, but it was right before we started recording. I'm like, well, why is the person who can listen to everybody and hear everybody's thoughts the one who gets to cross the border with the characters he hasn't had any interaction with up to that point? I feel like
he's still just like, yeah, he was just one of those characters that's just everywhere, even though he doesn't need to be.
Yeah, or maybe like,
yeah,
just a bug Sydney's room at the critical moment. Yeah. Maybe that's why it was.
It was like a cookie for him, you know, to just be there, honestly.
Yeah, but I loved it. I loved him. I thought the performance was great. I loved his chemistry with the actress who played his wife, who's another MVP who shows up over and over again in a bunch of dramas. But anyway, as I was saying, it just like this time around, I was much more invested in the secondary stories than I was in the main story. And at frequent points with the main story, I got really annoyed because I was like, you people are being really selfish. You're putting everybody's lives at risk around you. And it felt like they weren't really giving due consideration to the fact that literally dozens of people could be executed because of them. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just felt very, but then Melanie pointed out something I thought was a good counter argument to what I'm saying is that, or maybe it was Catherine, that this is representing the machinery of the governments that are keeping people apart, and that sort of that's why they weren't really being selfish. It was just more to illustrate like how you have these arbitrary things come apart and that people have to like try to reunite against the odds, even with that. So I thought that was, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll consider that. Because otherwise I was getting like with that whole scene at the border when they're saying goodbye at the border.
Oh yeah.
And they run, you know, she's running towards the border and he launches himself over the yellow line. And then every 25 people or 50 people pull out guns. And I'm like, somebody's going to get shot. I was
so nervous. Oh my God.
I know. But the thing is, they're taking their time. Oh, I love you. Oh, you know, don't forget me. It's like takes like, it feels like 10 minutes. It's not that long, but I'm like, hello.
I think it's one of those, it's out of time. Do you know what I mean?
And yeah. Like in
those moments, we're just seeing them in their bubble.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, we're experiencing what they're experiencing, which is that like time is telescoped or something. I mean, they could have said all those things very quickly, but they can't stand the fact that they literally could never see each other again. I mean, that I'm putting myself in their shoes. Literally, I could never see this person that I love again in my life. And he's that afraid that she's going to cross over and she's going to get. Yeah, Vicky is so right.
Vicky said this. Vicky read my mind because I'm like, they're never going to see each other again. And yet, no.
I don't want to say.
Right. Yeah, totally. You could have been going to town in that apartment. You could see how but it's funny because, like I said, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my God.
He could have showed her his scars in private and not in the hospital room.
How come she didn't already know all those scars? How come she didn't already know every damn scar in his torso? Okay, if you had him been in your apartment, you would know where those scars are.
I promise we're not perverts. We're not.
But you know, I brought this up before the podcast, and I just want to say, I mean, because to me, it's not about being a pervert.
Like,
if you love someone, sexual desire is part of that love, right? It's like you don't have to neuter somebody to prove the love is pure.
That's what was so refreshing about the My Lovely Samsung drama. I mean, that shows like some of these older dramas had more frank discussions of sexual desire. And there's a half an episode that Hyunbin's on the search for condoms, for God's sake.
I was going to say.
You know, so like we've gone backwards, you know, here we are in drama in 2020 and they barely even kiss, or it feels that way. So,
except I'm going to come back to this idea of who is the audience, because you know that I was talking about My Unfamiliar Family when we were chatting back channel, and there is a drama that's clearly aimed at a South Korean audience. And the first episode, there's
the character who ends up in bed with her new boss. We don't see anything except we see, I think, a kiss, and we see her waking up in his bed, and it's obvious they've done something. And then she has this frank discussion about it with her best
male friend.
And there are these discussions about all of that, and people are talking about these relationships. So it's obvious that Crash Landing on You is really aware that it's pitching itself at an audience beyond South Korea.
I mean, yes, but there are other dramas that are aimed at. I think that, so what I wonder, so okay, so we talked about how this is all metaphors for this very real, very horrible, tragic division of the country where families were literally ripped apart, where there's like a psychic scar in the country over this division. And that has played out. And you see this play out in dramas over and over again with the separations that people who don't have the same background often complain about and say, I hate the late separation. I hate that they separate the couple for 5 years. Well, but when you think about the cultural context for separations or reunifications, then yes, it becomes clearer. So the one thing I think about with regards to sex in this drama or the lack of sex in this drama is that there may be, because the metaphor is about really reuniting the country, maybe they didn't want to get sex in there because they're telling a different story, that it's really about something else. That was the thing in my brain that I came up with to try to figure out, because it was clearly a very conscious decision made by the people.
Yeah, it was. It. Yeah, you're right. It's so true. It's true. It could be.
I mean, they also were kind of, there's so many references to the two of them seeing or noticing babies or children, especially in South Korea. Like he holds the door open at the department store for a woman with a baby. She notices kids playing in a playground after she comes back to South Korea. When the intelligence service is showing tapes of Hyun Bin, it's like he's rescuing balloons for young kids or whatever. So over and over and over showing them, I mean, it just, I'm just saying it was notable to me second time around. Another thing that I noticed is costuming. That killer dress that Sari wears going to that first family dinner. Okay, so like everything she's wearing has these amazing padded shoulder pads, you know, she had, and so to me, I noticed that when she is in CEO mode, when she is her powerful South Korean self, business self, she is wearing a uniform in the same way that he's wearing a military uniform. When she's in North Korea, she's wearing soft sweaters, like sweaters you want to touch, like you're seeing the texture of them. And then when she's in South Korea and she's not at the business and at home, she's wearing soft sweaters around her lover. So, and then, you know, there's just, so that to me was amazing. But also we have to talk about one amazing clothing moment, the pretty man shopping spree. Like, so many
When she's dressing South Korea,
when they go to the department store and she pulls out her black card and she's like, if you're gonna be my bodyguard, we got to get you some clothes. And it's like, it's, there's so many makeover moments, not just in K-dramas but in all sorts of media, of women getting a makeover, and then this was a gender flip that the man got the makeover, and
honestly he deserved.
Right. And that she dressed him the way she wanted him to look, and she took him to get the haircut the way she was like.
He looked really great.
Have one of those haircuts that's not an official North Korean haircut.
Right, right.
Which is a thing.
Yes. And I mean, he looks so good. Oh my God. He looks so good. When he's guarding, I love this scene actually, when he's guarding her room and the brother shows up and the brother's like, tells his security people, sick him, you know, like whatever, get him out of there. And he completely kicks their asses. and doesn't even like ruffle his coat. It's so, yeah. He just looks exquisite in that scene. I have a screen cap of it that I keep pulling out and tweeting. And every time I tweeted, people like a million people.
The man that he is. The man that he is.
He is so just looked
really good. He's tall and it's like, he bulked up and it's like,
Thank you. No, he is. At the first watch of this, I was completely head over heels over him. Yeah. And then I went looking for him in other things. And then I saw Memories of the Alhambra, which was unsatisfactory. And then, it's not a good drama. He looked good, but it's not a good drama. And then, Samsoon, which is brilliant. And he's brilliant in it. We love him, boy. But, you know, he's just.
Catherine, there was a lot of references to older dramas, and you're someone that has much more experience than the rest of us. And what was the name of the drama that Jumuk is obsessed with, and then he gets to meet the actress from?
Stairway to Heaven. Okay, it's an old drama, so your production values, and it's like faded lovers who get separated. It's it's very mukjang. The emotions are very high. The male leads do a lot of, they're very rough with the female leads. So there's a lot of grabbing and pushing, which, you know, should put me off. There's a lot of running in it. Mm. I adore this drama. I wept buckets for this drama. So when I saw it come up here, I thought, oh my god, that's so perfect. It's like they took Jumuk's favorite drama is the polar opposite of Crash Landing on You. They took a drama like Crash Landing on You, we've talked about it, sort of chaste and pure, and his favorite drama is one of these ones that is so hyper emotional. And he has at the beginning, the first time we see him, when he's in the guard post and he's watching that, and he's saying the dialogue from the film, because there are two leads in the drama have necklaces that they wear, and the necklaces fit, the bits fit into each other. Oh my god, yeah. It's so adorable. And he's saying, put on the necklace, and he's saying the famous dialogue, which is, lovers who are fated to meet will always meet, no matter if they've been separated, which again, it ties into Crash Landing on You.
Yep.
The hat, the red hat with the little bunny.
Yeah.
The lead character in Stairway to Heaven knits this hat for the male lead when they're teenagers, with complete with the little bunny, and he wears it. And then the older actor, who plays the lead when they're older, at one point brings the hat out. And that scene where Jumuk meets the actress, he's wearing the hat, and he does the thing where he pulls the hat down. That's straight from Stairway to Heaven. And even at that point, the camera does this circular pan around them, because this drama is like somebody went to film school and this was their first job, and they wanted to use every film thing they'd learned. So you have these things where leads will be pining from afar, and the camera will start from far, and then it will zoom in on them, and you'll have the camera go in circles around them. I adore it. I should not love this drama.
That's hilarious.
Everything about this drama I should hate, but I adore it. And I love the fact when Jumuk is in the PC Bung, and the Makne is playing video games, he's binge watching all of the actress's dramas because he loves her.
Yeah.
And he's also, she's a fashion designer, and she designs these scarves that are supposed to be for, it's before we get into the period of couple things. She designs them as couple scarves, and the scarf he's wearing when he goes to meet her looks like the one in the drama.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like,
see, there's a lot of Easter eggs like that in the drama. The most famous one being the delivery guy who was in a movie that was a North Korean spy. He portrays a North Korean spy in a film, and the same character appears in the South Korean.
Oh, yeah. Yes. From Secretly Greatly, when the ducklings first arrive in South Korea, they meet
right.
his character.
Yeah.
That movie is all about North Korean operatives who are planted in South Korea, and they're given their persona. So here is a very highly trained North Korean spy whose persona is to be the village idiot. And he's wearing a track suit and his set slippers, and he's constantly, and he has these notes where he's told, you must do this every day. You must do this every day. So it's like he takes a tumble downstairs and he makes himself look like an utter idiot in front of everybody. It's hysterical to me that when the ducklings arrive and he pegs them.
Yeah.
Right. He knows immediately that they're like from, which is also part of the joke. Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I think on the bigger themes of the show, now that I'm thinking about it, if you're looking at this as an audience of both people in North Korea who will eventually see this, and then people in South Korea who are still maybe the generation that has a memory of the Korean War is dying out. But, you know, like the idea that North Koreans can be these heroic figures in the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. Is a big deal.
I think the villain in this piece, and I think you don't like him and I don't like him, but he's very representative of how North Korean soldiers are usually presented in Korean dramas. He's very much a stereotype.
Right.
And I've mentioned the film Confidential Assignment, which is Hyun Bin playing a North Korean soldier who comes south to catch a villain. And the villain is played by Kim Ji-hyuk, the late Kim Ji-hyuk. And we see him for like one scene at the beginning, and he is so compelling that he just grabs us. And you know why they have to go after him. And you don't see him again till the end of the movie. But it's just like, and then you see this, the way this character is written, and it's like, that's not very satisfying, is it?
No.
And it's also that he's working with Chinese gangsters, so they bring that element in.
Which we know is controversial, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but I was also going to say, I'm going to call him Alberto, like the fact that he, you know, criminals could hide out in North Korea, like I never would have even thought of that. But again, like, where could you go where you couldn't be seen? I guess that would be one place that you could go. That whole thing was kind of fascinating to me too. I just loved his character. He's a lovable rogue. One thing that I noticed on a rewatch is that at a certain point when he decides to help Sari and the captain and help to get her across the border, at one point the bruises and cuts and abrasions on his face exactly mirror Hyun Bin's from a little bit earlier. And so it's sort of like they're signaling to us, you know, he's become a hero now. You know, he is transformed from this con man at the beginning to at one point there's a questionable part where he kind of entraps her, you know what I mean, and is trying to take her phone away and not let her call anybody and whatever, but then he transitions, and I just love his arc through this whole thing. And like you said, I wanted so much more of his romance and more scenes, and maybe, you know, by the time they got at the end, they didn't have time to put more in, but oh my gosh, yeah, like cried buckets at what happened to him at the end.
His scene in the marketplace when the orphans are singing is so well done. I love that scene. It's really, really heart-wrenching, and
yeah, I cried there too.
Yeah, his arc was really great, and I want to shout out the actor because I think we're all fans of him.
Yeah.
He's great. He was in Mr. Queen.
Yes.
And what else was he in? I feel like there's another drama I'm missing.
Welcome to Waikiki.
Right. Yes, Welcome to Waikiki. He is an amazing comedic actor. His comedy chops in Mr. Queen. So good.
But he can turn on the drama too when he needs to. So he's good. He's really great.
I
was just going to say that the scene where he rips the ticket with his mouth when he decides to not escape and to go on a rescue mission where he pulls that shotgun out. I don't know, but evidently the ripping the ticket with his mouth was an ad lib, and it's such an iconic gifable moment now that you see over and over again. It's just kind of, so yeah, I mean, he's got comedic chops, but also just, he just has a flair about him. I admire his acting very much. Go ahead.
And I loved him so much in Welcome to Waikiki that I was really glad to see him in Time, which unfortunately he had to pull out of after 4 episodes. And he was like, and it wasn't comedic, it was dark, and he was brilliant. And I think that such, I mean, you know, if someone has to pull out of for health or, you know, mental health issues or physical health issues, that I mean, it, you can't avoid it. It's there's nothing to change that. But oh, just to see the range.
Oh yeah. I saw some edits of his the ones that he filmed with Time. It was amazing. I mean, yeah. I was like, and I understand why, if he really was suffering, he pulled out. It was really dark. I mean, yeah. It was dark. Mm-hmm. So
I feel bad for him because he does seem like he's a emotionally vulnerable person who's had some struggles, and there's a current, I don't even want to get into scandal.
It's too much going on.
Yeah, it is. But actually, it got me thinking too, something I wanted to mention is like, Son Ye-jin and Hyun Bin went public with their relationship in January. I guess it was on New Year's, like some magazine reveals a couple every year or something like that.
We don't claim them.
Well, anyway, somebody did. I'm caught up on all this. Sorry, I don't really follow the gossip very much. But I mean, when they went public, people went bananas. And it's actually fueled even more, I think, the craze for the show. And I think it's definitely, I hope they never break up because, you know, because the dark side of that is what happened with, and I apologize for not knowing the actor's name who played.
From Alberto. Descendants of the Sun? Oh.
Oh, you're thinking Song Couple, which was
Yeah, and they got into a mess, a really ugly, really, really like twisted, I don't even want to get into it, mess that now, of course, taints how you view their dramas. Or it can, you know, none, it doesn't necessarily have to happen, but it can. And so I think, you know, there's always that risk when there's a couple of it blowing up, and then the like Brad and Angelina in Hollywood, and then all their projects are tainted. But hopefully that doesn't happen with the couple here. But in the meantime, while they're together, people are going bananas. I mean, on my Twitter timeline, and it actually makes me a little uncomfortable because some people, I think, cross the line. When you're photoshopping Son Ye-jin to look pregnant, you've crossed the line. If you like start writing fanfic about how they're going to raise their family, you've crossed the line. And I see it. I automatically unfollow these people, but it goes into my timeline. So I think people are invested to a great, I mean, I don't think any of us, I mean, I can't speak for it, but I don't know how closely you follow the gossip about K-drama stars. I don't follow it very closely, but inevitably you get exposed to it through your timeline. And I think that you can't really separate the appeal of Hyun Bin and Son Ye-jin from the appeal of the couple at this point of Seri and Kat. I'm pretty sure, like a lot of people, it's like a dual investment. It's almost like they get conflated, which is dangerous and probably not that great. But I think at this point you can totally say that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I only started shipping them based on their off-screen interactions. Like watching the show, I didn't ship them, but then I watched their interviews and like the video compilations, and then I was like, okay, I like them together. So I can definitely watch Crash Landing on You and not related to their relationship, because honestly I feel like they probably have a much funner relationship anyway, so I feel like I can separate that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, it's kind of weird too. But I like them together separately from whatever they do, you know.
They're very cute together. I love their dynamic. I love their interviews. They're absolutely adorable. But you do, I see a lot of funky stuff on my timeline. I'm like, boundaries, people, boundaries, like, please calm down. No real person fic. But Melanie, you wanted to say something. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm excited about the recent news of the next project that Sonya Jin is signing up for.
Yes.
And that is a drama that evidently is going to be called 39. And it's going to be about a group of women friends who are about to turn 40. And, you know, casting news is dribbling out, but it seems like she's definitely signed on for it. And that's exciting. So
I love dramas like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm up for that.
And she's just a fantastic actress. And I think I would watch her in just about anything. So,
oh, yes. You watched something in the Rain, right? Well, the first 12 yes. episodes. Okay.
I have watched something in the Rain.
Yeah.
And I really
liked her. The romance with her. And So for anybody looking for dramas to watch after maybe starring them or whatever, that's always one drama I could think of. There's another one she did with Lee Min Ho that you can also watch. Personal Taste.
Okay, I haven't seen that one. So you haven't seen that one?
She's a great actor. She looks so different. That was my first drama I ever saw of her, and I couldn't believe that was the same person, because the characters were just like totally different. But that's how good she is. So there's that two options that I can offer right now. Anybody has any other ones of her or Hyunbin that they can?
Actually, there's a movie with both of them. Although if you want, you know, lovely interaction with him, you'll be dissatisfied. It's called The Negotiation.
Yeah.
It's actually referenced at the beginning of Crash Landing on You, in one of the episode one or two. He actually looks at her and says, "Are you trying to negotiate with me?"
He plays a villain.
He plays a villain. Mm-hmm. They actually don't share any screen time until
I heard about that.
I mean, they are on screen at the same time, but through screens, because he's a kidnapper and she's the conflict negotiator. So they're talking through this level of screen. Mm. And they don't actually meet until quite near the end of the movie. But it's very dark. It's very, I think Hyunbin is really good in it. She's good in it too, because she's this negotiator who she's in a conflict situation right at the beginning of the film, and she's undermined by all the men around her, and it turns into a disaster, and she wants to submit her resignation. And just as she's submitting her resignation, they pull her in to this second negotiation. And it's another one of these situations where she realizes this time she's being undermined, and she's so, she wants so much to have things not turn out like the disaster they could be. It's really a good film.
What other shows with Hyunbin? I think I have dropped Memories of the Alhambra. I've never finished that one. I may have to go back just to be a completist, but that one was kind of frustrating. I hated that.
And I didn't like him in it. Like, I don't think it served him well.
But he was fine. The writing was messed up.
Yeah.
I think he was fine. I Secret Garden is like the iconic show with him, but I actually don't like Secret Garden, but that's just me. A lot of people love it. So if you're really into him, you should definitely at least check it out. To wrap things up, I want to actually go person by person on this one. Do you think that 10 to 15 years from now, people will be watching and recommending this show? And I'm going to let Mel go first.
I would definitely say yes. I come back to, because this is a show that was a gateway for people, their entrance into Korean dramas. And I think it's going to be continued to be recommended as an entry point for people. It is a good mix of a lot of things. It has a little action. It has a little humor. It has found family. And it has this great romance. I think it is one that's going to continue to be recommended to people to start viewing. And I think it's going to stand the test of time. So I think it already is, you know, like a modern classic.
Go ahead, Vicky.
I thought I was solid in the beginning, but now halfway as this is ending, I think that it can be a subjective show in a way where, because I've had two friends that I recommended to who didn't like it. And so I look at it like there's just going to be that kind of vibe in general. And their main reasons for not liking it was, once again, the sob fest. It felt like it was just like, too much for them. And they were my age group. So with it being a classic, I don't know. I kind of lean on it being, I think it will be a popular drama that people will refer to, but classic wise, I really think it will be up to the person to decide. It's subjective in a way, because it gives you the flavors that, based on me, the classics that I've watched, it's not how I feel about Chloe, if that makes sense. But like I said, it can be for anybody. Everybody can view it as a classic if they want to, but I lean towards it being, I don't know, I think it depends on the person. So who knows, right? I think who knows?
And Catherine, what do you think?
There's the heavy sigh and the big pause. I definitely can see it being recommended for people. I can definitely see why it would be a good gateway. I find it interesting that its biggest defenders are people for whom it was a first drama and they have become obsessed with it. I would not be offended if it ended up as a classic drama, but there's a little part of me that would like to see other dramas get that label before Crash Landing on You. Was that diplomatic enough?
You know, I think it is a gateway, and once you experience other dramas, you can, I'm not going to say that this is the best of all time. That's not what I'm saying. But I do think it's, because it's so accessible and because it kind of teaches you what K-dramas are about, it is one that I think is going to be recommended as a first drama over and over again. So,
and I agree with that. Oh, and I was just going to say, I think there's going to be a split in the fandom. So people who are experienced K-drama watchers who saw this show after having already a few dramas under their belt are not going to have the same emotional connection to it as the people who for whom this was their first, especially the people for whom this was their first in a pandemic when we were all terrified and looking for something to escape to and getting swept up in this drama. Having said that, though, like 10 or 15 years from now, can I see people recommending it? Definitely, because I see it with Boys Over Flowers, which is a very different show, but the people who for whom that was their first drama, they will recommend it over and over again. I think there's an emotional connection there that people have with this that is going to endure, but it's not universal. Like, I think people who are experienced K-drama watchers will go, that was a good show. Now I'm going to go watch the 15 other shows in my list. And then there's the people who, like, it's their forever love. Like, they'll always, you know, have hard eyes. Yeah. Okay, well, that wraps things up. Thank you so much, guys, for hanging in with us. And we hope you appreciate our dissection of this drama. And we will see you soon, or speak to you soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.